Hi everyone, welcome to the Agent Effect podcast. I'm your host, Paul Jarrett. And today I have the pleasure of being with Krishna Gade, the founder and CEO of Fiddler AI, a leading force in AI observability, bringing trust, transparency, and accountability to enterprise AI systems. With past engineering leadership at Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Microsoft, he's shaping the future of responsible AI at scale. At Facebook, he led the news feed ranking team. At Twitter and Pinterest, he built large-scale data platforms powering personalization and discovery. Welcome, Krishna.
Thank you so much, Paul. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
So maybe you could start by just telling us a little bit about your background. You know, how did you come to set up Fiddler AI?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm an engineer by background. You know, I came to the States in 2001, you know, for my grad school. After that, worked in Bing Search at Microsoft. This was a small team trying to build a web search engine at scale, and I was working on the search quality. And that's where I got exposed to machine learning, and we were building these two-layer neural networks for search ranking that you could train on a desktop and deploy to production. Yeah. After that, I spent time in social media companies like Twitter, Pinterest, and Facebook. A lot of my responsibilities were on building data infrastructure for analytics, you know, real-time analytics of streaming data, and then, you know, machine learning infrastructure. So especially at Facebook, I was working on explainability and model observability tools for newsfeed ranking. This was quite important for the company at the time to increase transparency around newsfeed. You know, we specifically built products like, why am I seeing this story in the newsfeed? Which basically exposed human-readable insights into the inner workings of the algorithm. And that's kind of what motivated me to start Fiddler, because the hypothesis we had was AI is going to be a first-class citizen in the enterprise stack, and there'll be a new set of tools required to develop, deploy, and monitor it. And we wanted to be the platform that people could use to monitor and observe and understand AI. Because at the end of the day, the mission of the company is to build trust in AI, and the only way to do it is to be able to know how it's working behind the scenes. And that's what Fiddler is unlocking for our customers today.
Yeah, that sounds like a very good, worthwhile cause. So I understand that agents are a very big part of your business. There's a lot of discussion around them in the industry and a lot of different kind of description about what they actually are. Could you just tell us, like, how do you define an AI agent?
Absolutely. I think an agent, like what its name is, it has agency to do things, right? So we have seen the evolution of AI from classical machine learning to large language models, now to agentic workflows. So if you've seen like the classical machine learning models, they would get trained on, you know, let's say your historical data sets, you know, and try to predict the future. So you may have a fraud detection model that is trained upon the past transactions that were legitimate and fraudulent, and now it knows how to predict the potential future transaction with some level of accuracy. Yeah. Now, then came a large language models a few years ago, which basically processed all the unstructured data and all the content on the web and help you, you know, provide you the ability to generate content. So it could be generating, you know, essays, you know, basically summaries of given blobs of text, you know, even generating images, and we are seeing generation of videos and audios as well. Agents take this even more further, right? Agentic workflows take all of these models and combine with your, you know, software logic to implement certain tasks. So you could essentially build an agentic workflow to automate your claims processing. Instead of like having a rule-based system that, you know, that you coded in the past, you could have a model-based system, which is an agentic workflow that is, you know, automating this task, right? You can have an agentic workflow that, you know, creates a credit risk report. You can have an agentic workflow that essentially automates customer service, provides intelligent answers to your customer support folks, to where it queries all of your structured data of previous customer interactions and can tell you, you know, how or the customer is doing, whether they're going to churn in the next few months, you know, what can you do? So these are more action-oriented. That's basically how we define, you know, agents and, you know, and there's like a lot of different ways that you're building agents now, from single agent to multiple agents as well.
So given kind of your role with Fiddler AI, is it kind of responsible, like implementing responsible AI? Why were agents a good fit for your particular offering?
Because look, I mean, this morning I was reading an article by Jensen Huang, right? And there's this big debate on, you know, who needs to implement safe and responsible AI, why AI safety is important. And also New York State passed a, you know, AI regulation as well this morning. So So I think at the end of the day, AI is growing at a rapid pace. You know, as in the models are becoming more and more complex over the time. They're able to do increasingly, you know, interesting and complex tasks. But this is all a black box for a human. You know, how is it working behind the scenes? You know, when would it generate incorrect answers or take incorrect actions? And especially if these systems are running in high stakes, you know, situations, like, you know, now we are seeing AI being implemented for clinical diagnosis, mm-hmm. drug discovery, you know, insurance use cases, banking use cases, HR use cases, where there's an outcome that could affect a human, in a good way or potentially an adverse way, right? Yeah. So it's very important for us to build transparency and trust into these systems so that you can confidently deploy them. It's almost like, you know, it's an accountability that we need to take to do this. The other part of it is responsible AI, or, you know, being able to invest in these best practices of AI building, help you a better form of AI as well. You know, at the end of the day, you know, it comes down to like dollars, right? You know, mm-hmm. large companies are investing hundreds of millions of dollars in buying massive infrastructure like GPU farms and training these models, or even buying foundation model licenses. And all of this will come to fruition if those applications work the way as you expect. If there is no ROI, then what's the point of it? So it's our slogan is responsible AI, we call it RAI, is ROI. You know, so if you do it, then it's actually not just good for society, good for your customers, it's actually good for the company, good for the enterprise, so that you're deploying high quality AI applications to your end users.
And so you must speak a lot to customers around about agentifying their business and agents and how they work. Like, what are you hearing, you know, some of the bottlenecks that they're coming to you with, like when they're thinking about, you know, applying agents?
Yeah, look, I think there are basically two kinds of use cases that we see when customers think about agentifying their business processes. Mm. One is there is a bunch of legacy software that already exists. You know, we are working with a fintech analytics company that produces, you know, financial analytics solutions for their banking customers. And they've been in business for a number of years. They have 30 different products today in the market, and they sell to banks and, you know, a lot of, like, you know, fintechs and credit unions. Now, they're trying to take their solutions, which they're selling to these financial analysts, and layering on a generative AI or agentic layer on top of it. Mm-hmm. And so this is basically what you're saying is you're taking your existing software and putting an agentic skin on top of it so that it's much more accessible. So instead of having like one use case they mentioned to me is like a deposit analytics solution that usually mostly financial analysts get to use it. But putting an agentic skin on top of it, now they can democratize its access mm-hmm. to more people in the organization, you know, like including from a CFO to, like, you know, non-technical folks can also glean insights from it. So it just increases the utility of that product, you know, increases the value of the product to their organization, right?
Yeah.
So that's one use case. The second use case is a lot of new things are being built. You know, people are reimagining business processes, you know, rewriting them completely with agentic AI in mind. So it's now instead of putting a skin, you're actually completely refactoring that business process to be an agentic workflow. So one use case we've heard is most people are building these renewal AI assistants or assistants that inform customer support teams about how their, you know, end customers are doing. Many SaaS companies have this problem. They have to, you know, understand how their customers are doing at any given point. And usually most of this activity has been done by, you know, legacy CRM tools that, you know, use more, you know, rule-based or statistical-based metrics to understand churn of customers and whatnot. But with generative AI and agentic workflows, you could build assistants that can give humans, like customer support folks, a natural language interface to ask questions. Hey, you know, let's say imagine like JP Morgan is my customer. I can ask like, hey, how is JP Morgan doing? You know, what was their last few interactions with our team? You know, are they happy? You know, are they going to churn in the next month? What is the likelihood? So these are all like human level interactions that that empower your support agents to like with a lot more insights. So these are the use cases. Now, the challenge behind implementing these things is how are you going to make sure that the agents are performing the right actions? That, you know, because they're all doing, the outcomes are all determined by the models, right? Whether the large language models or, you know, classical machine learning. And, you know, model outcomes are not necessarily 100% accurate. So how do you know when they might be doing or taking a wrong action, mm-hmm. or they are providing a bad guidance or incorrect guidance, right? So being able to detect accuracy and responses and how their actions are, their performing actions, is a big problem. The other problem is, how do you know if like the workflow is processing this properly? You know, if there are intermittent failures, why that might be failing, if a database lookup is failing, or if a wrong context is passed down the chain of the agentic workflow, how do you know that? So being able to instrument the entire workflow, being able to observe it and monitor it, becomes very important at that point. Otherwise, what happens is a lot of this work stays in prototype mode. And this is one of the problems that today with AI agents or even in generative AI is a lot of the stuff gets stalled in prototyping mode. And in order to launch to production to get that ROI, you need the ability to evaluate them, you need the ability to monitor them, you need the ability to set up controls and guardrails around them so that you know that, you know, they're doing their job, you know, accurately and for your users.
Well, so let's say I'm a bank and I want to identify my customer service regime. Like, where do I start?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? So, look, I mean, a lot of banks have chatbots that are their old school chatbots that are, you know, mostly rule-based or decision tree-based systems that they know, okay, if you ask this a question, you know, it gets routed in a particular manner based on the decision tree logic. And, you know, there are some, you know, factoids that are baked in place that are retrieved as answers for those questions, right? Mm-hmm. These systems fail for, you know, if you ask slightly different question, or some latest event that has happened. So they're not frequently updated, these databases, and they cannot answer like these fuzzy questions in a relevant manner. So it's a great opportunity to put a Gen AI skin on it, where you can still use your rule-based system. You can still control the answers that you want to provide, but you can expand, you can actually provide like a more of a natural language interface for your customer so that it feels like interacting with a human, and you can actually ask the same question differently and the chatbot still understands it and can still process it and give you the relevant answer, right? And similarly, that's one way to like apply a skin. The other way is like, look, I mean, you can completely rewrite this conversational assistant using a Gen AI application. You know, you can say, okay, now we're going to modernize this completely. We'll take all of our data, put it into some vector database. We will create, you know, use some, you know, foundation model to summarize these answers. We will create like a generative Gen AI application that can, you know, take these things almost like a ChatGPT style application on top of it. So these are two choices that are present. You know, you can go either way. It depends on what is the ROI that you're looking for. What is the bang for the buck?
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, staying with the kind of the bank scenario, obviously we have regulated and non-regulated industries, banking being regulated. Like, where and how do I, as a bank, apply responsible AI?
Yeah. Look, I think at the end of the day, responsible AI is sort of best practices, right? It's essentially ability to, control and test and monitor how your AI systems are being developed, deployed, and shipped and production. So it's more of a process that you need to implement, and tools like Fiddler help you enable those processes. For example, you know, let's take this hypothetical case, right? A bank is trying to create a customer service chatbot and it wants to modernize their, you know, call center or like, you know, just like customer experience. And they can, you know, they can start with this sort of stack where, you know, how, where is all of our unstructured data, you know, all the previously answered questions, you know, how do we make them available for retrieval? You know, this is where all the vector database come in. And what are the language models that we can use, you know, for our use case to summarize these answers effectively? And how do we test this, you know? So, and this is where evaluation comes in. So evaluation is very important for, you know, agentic workflows and Gen AI workflows, because you need to know if the answers are accurate, you know, it'll help you. And also being able to know if someone can hack into your chatbot and ask malicious questions, there are these prompt injection attacks that could happen where they can retrieve sensitive user information externally. So how effective are your controls in place to block those things? And then monitor when you deploy this application to production, being able to monitor for these things.
So tell me a bit more about Fiddler and how you prevent some of these, you know, problems.
So, absolutely. So Fiddler is an AI observability platform. So we attach ourselves to your AI workflow. You know, we are agnostic to what a foundation model provider you would use, whether it's open source or a cloud-based foundation model provider, and what programming framework you would use, like to orchestrate these agents. You know, there are many open source or programming frameworks like LangChain, Crew AI, and others. We can basically attach ourselves and consume the exhaust of your agentic workflows or Gen AI applications. So by exhaust, what I mean is the log of prompts, responses, metadata. It could be other events that are produced in an agentic workflow that go into our system. And then we then give you insights into how the app is performing. So if it's like a standard RAG application, like a generative AI application, you would see a scorecard of like, you know, this is basically how many times your app was hallucinating, or this was the safety scores on your application. This is how this is the PII frequency on your application, or this is the cybersecurity report on it, right? So you have all these comprehensive metrics. You can also bring in your business data, KPI data. For example, how many times are users satisfied with the answers, and sort of combine it with this matrix to come up with like, okay, what is my ROI? What is the cost for running this application in production? And am I seeing ROI for it? So you can measure all of those things. You can measure the model metrics. You can measure the K business metrics and whatnot. And now if you move to agents now, so agents have system failures as well. Tool calls that go wrong, database retrievals that go wrong, you know, memory issues. So we measure system issues as well with agentic workflows. And we then we instrument the entire agentic workflow, not just the end-to-end part of it, but the internal constituents, and provide you tracing capabilities. So you could visualize the agentic workflow, the hierarchy of it, how the session in an agentic workflow is flowing, which subtasks are failing, and why they might be failing. And so it helps you do root cause analysis as a developer and identify issues. So you'll have like a comprehensive observability with root cause analysis, report generation. So as a developer, you know what's going on with your AI application. You can debug it. You can get alerts when things go wrong. And at the same time, you can create reports to communicate the success and the wins to the broader organization and sort of track it on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's very cool. Are you using multi-agent systems at all, or are you using singles?
A lot of the customers today, most of our customers, we were tracking some numbers, like almost 70% of the use cases are still single agent workflows. You know, a lot of the multi-agent stuff is still kind of being developed. There are a lot of, you know, different opinions on how to create these multi-agent architectures. For example, you know, how much parallelism do you want to introduce into agents, you know, when you're sort of, you know, distilling your task into constituent subtasks, how much linear you want to go. I think there are a lot of these interesting points of views we are seeing in the industry that is emerging. So then I would say like it's still in the infancy. But what makes this whole system important, the observability system that we're launching, actually, we just launched our agentic observability product at the Databricks Summit this week, is that it's much more suitable for the multi-agent workflows, you know, because that's where the complexity increases, right? Because the failures can happen intermediate stages, and you don't know why things have failed. And being able to track that down is going to be important.
Yeah, presumably there's a bit of redundancy built in as well with multi-agent systems. If one agent fails, another one can pick up where the other one left off. So, I mean, just kind of staying with the multi-agent system analogy for a little while, as these systems grow bigger and bigger, as you move scale to like hundreds of agents, like how do you scale the responsible AI with it?
Absolutely. This is where observability becomes so important, right? I remember I was an engineer at Twitter way back in the 2010, early 2010. So for those of you in the audience who are old enough, they would probably remember the fail whale. You know, the fail whale would happen when Twitter had peak traffic, you know, usually a celebrity tweets or some big event happens in the world and Twitter erupts. And then at the time, our infrastructure, we were still scaling our infrastructure, and we would show like a whale being carried by the words, which means the site is down and the engineers are working on it. And it used to be a nightmare for us whenever that happens, right? And so the problem there was you had a lot of these microservices behind the scenes that would run all the way from constructing the tweet timeline that you need to see, extracting the data from databases, authorizing the user when they log in. All of this is sort of, you can describe it as an agentic workflow, but in the software construct. So there's a directed acyclic graph of tasks running, all these at runtime. And you want to execute this, you know, under hundreds of milliseconds, right? Because for better user satisfaction. Now, any of those tasks failing would mean that, you know, you are not going to be reliable for the user. So you needed to monitor all of those things. You needed to know if found database is getting overloaded, or if the cache miss rate is increasing, or if suddenly some attack is happening on your DNS and whatnot. So the same things apply for agents, but in a different manner. Here, the workflow is orchestrated in almost like a rule-based system, right? You have deterministic code logic that is saying, if you see this, route this request to this particular service. Or if you see a cache miss, do this, right? Here, the logic is model-directed, you know? So that is the whole point. So how, and so you're moving from this deterministic AI, deterministic software application to like a non-deterministic software application from code-based largely model-based guidance. And that's where new kind of observability is needed. Okay. And so as the agents, as you said, to hundreds of sub-agents, the problem will only grow for teams to be able to know what's going on within the workflow and diagnose those failures.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about the trust layer.
Yeah.
Like what does that look like, and how is that different from traditional MLOps?
Yeah. So I have a philosophical take on this thing. One of my favorite books on this topic is the book called Sapiens, where it's one of those, I think I'm sure like a lot of audience must have read it. There's actually a very nice chapter on it, which talks about why humans as a species have been successful, you know. And the author talks about two things that separated humans from other animals, like successful meaning we now like occupy the most of the planet, and you know we've done a lot of imaginative things and improved our lives. I think two things was, one is our ability to build and scale trust. So one example the other side says, you can put like 100,000 chimpanzees in a stadium, and there'll be a fight. But you can, you know, forget about 100,000. You can have 1,000 chimpanzees and there'll be a fight, right? But you can have 100,000 fans go to a, you know, football game and come back, you know, without any problem. Or you can have hundreds of millions of people governed by, you know, a single president or a prime minister, right? So we have, humans have this ability to build trust in levels of abstraction. I think that is what manifests itself when in AI as well, right? So largely in the past, you know, centuries, we have been used to working with the other human and being able to know whether we trust that individual or not, or with a process, with an institution, right? But now as AI is taking over the decision-making, you know, now instead of a human underwriter, an AI-based assistant might be underwriting your loans. Or maybe like in the future, maybe AI will, you know, help interview candidates, or it will provide medical advice, or, you know, clinical diagnosis, or like already AI-based call centers might be giving you customer support advice. How do you trust that? How do you know it's working? Now, from a tactical perspective, for us, trust meaning that if you can measure it, then you can understand it, right? If you cannot measure it, you cannot, then you really don't know, you know, you can't really quantify, you know, whether you believe it or not. So we actually believe in, you know, monitoring a lot of facets of, you know, AI, you know, whether it's relevancy of outputs, accuracy, bias, you know, how, you know, whether there's toxicity, security, you know, all of these aspects that could go wrong with AI, you know, by measuring them, you know, by measuring them accurately, AI teams can build trustworthy AI and deploy and to their end users.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I wonder if you can point to like a couple of examples, like maybe with the existing clients or in your past, you know, career, like where businesses have been successful in this and applying trust.
You know, one of our largest clients is U.S. Navy in the Department of Defense, right? So they leverage Fiddler for understanding how their computer vision models work. Okay. So this is a public use case. We talk about there's a lot of computer vision data that they collect from underwater sea objects, and you know, and they run computer vision models to detect, you know, what those are. Is it like a plane or a ship that sank years ago, or what was it? Is it an underwater threat? But these computer vision models are not 100% accurate. So you need to monitor them. You need to monitor them. If, like, you know, you can have accuracy issues because the sensors that are collecting the images may have problems,
right,
and they may be sending blurry images, or you may have a situation where the model itself is misclassifying, you know, why, you know, hypothetically, like a plane to be a ship. So Fiddler's explainability and monitoring products help you as a developer to understand it. If there is like a model drift happening, mm-hmm, if like it could be happening because of bad sensor data, it could be that the model has become stale and it's underperforming, you can get an alert and detect it. Or if it's a model misclassifying, you can pinpoint why that is happening. On the GenAI side, we work with one of the largest travel marketplaces in San Francisco. They have built a customer support assistant to provide, you know, guidance on how their support people can resolve conflicts. So they have like the provider and the requester. It's a travel marketplace, and they want to know who's at fault, because they are kind of in the intermediary, right, stage. And being able to know and do this accurately is very important, right? You don't want to have a summary that is incorrect here. You want to have a GenAI assistant that's looking at all the, you know, sort of arguments that are happening in that message window and being able to summarize them accurately. And that's where Fiddler helps in providing scores, real-time scores, that look, this summary is 90% accurate, or we call it faithful to the source data, or, you know, it seems like only 60% faithful. So that means that the human looking at it can go and personally look at it and see what's going on. And this feedback can go to the developer team to go and improve why the output might be producing some sort of hallucination there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think, you know, as we start to see more of these, I mean, human in the loop is becoming more and more important, right, as the industry develops. What about like standards and certifications for agent-based systems? Do you think there's a role for those as we, you know, become more and more advanced with these systems?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we've seen certifications like SOC 2 compliance that have become very important for third-party software today. And even like we are a software vendor at the end of the day, when we work with our customers, they do ask for SOC 2 compliance, HIPAA compliance, and other compliance certificates that and which we need to make sure that we are constantly adhering to. And I see a world where as software becomes largely agentic, AI-based software, there will be a new kind of certification that are needed that might tell you, give me a scorecard of what you did with it. How did you build your agentic app? How did you test it? What were your evaluation metrics like? Already, we see this happening in some regulated industry, like, say banks, which have existing model risk management guidelines, So I think it only would just become a norm in the future when, all software becomes AI-based software, then you have to have a new set of certificates that you need to provide to the end customer to build confidence that, you've done the due diligence in terms of making sure that your AI is working properly.
Do you see those standards being driven at the government level or the vendor level or both?
I think the best way is to is the community to come up with those things. I think government is usually a laggard in these cases. Sometimes if the government acts too quickly, it might actually also hinder, innovation. So, there are some, for example, if you look at Europe, they've taken the stance of implementing this EU AI Act, right? So I think, my opinion is given the situation where we are with, international competition around AI and, the need for the US to continue to be the leader in AI, which I think is very important for the world. I think it's going to be important to have some sort of a community-based approach to start with, because it's also important to figure out what are the standards you want to set, right? What does it mean to get an agent certification here? Is it standard around the processes or the actual outcomes? What do you want to set standards on? And then kind of take it to eventually sort of mandated by some sort of a regulation eventually.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I guess, looking ahead, what excites you or I guess worries you about this growth and autonomy of, complexity of AI agents that we're kind of moving it towards now?
I mean, the exciting part of it is the possibilities, right? Exciting part of it is the amount of grunt work that is going to get automated. I see it in my own experience of using these tools on a day-to-day basis, I use a lot of these tools as, in many different ways, right? From my improving my writing to just brainstorming to, getting new ideas. And I think it's already wonderful. And I see the world where a lot of these menial tasks getting automated, intelligent automations coming in, and it's going to free up human time to focus on other and more important and interesting activities. I think that's going to be a massive, massive, thing for humans in general, right? So from reduction of the grunt work and automation of these things.
What about vibe coding?
The vibe coding. I think that's very interesting. I mean, the software engineer in me, I learned code by, in the 90s, writing down on paper, because we actually in India, growing up in India, computer access was very limited, so you had to take turns. So you had to first write down the accurate code, and you would sort of then get a chance to type it into the computer and and see how it works, right? So you had to literally write code. There's no assistant that's actually going to write it for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you've seen a period where all the developers became code assemblers, and in some ways no one wrote code, but sort of assembled code from various different places, existing code or Stack Overflow and whatnot.
Yeah.
And now you're seeing AI do it for you.
Yeah.
I think the human element is still very important there, right? Because I think you won't take away the ability to debug and understand the code. Because even in, when I used to work at these companies, the most experienced or the strongest engineer was not someone who would write a lot of code, but someone who can debug complex code and review other people's code, right? I think that is still, to me, largely a human in the loop exercise.
Right.
So So I think I'm a fan. I think it's great that AI is helping, you know, with vibe coding and whatnot. I mean, just coming back to your original question, of course, like downsides of it. The downsides of it we just talked about. If you don't take care of some of these principles that we talked about, transparency, auditability, and being able to know what's going on within AI, observability, you know, you could build AI systems that could be bad for, you know, society at large, as well as, you know, just even immediate business outcomes. And that's my worry too, like, you know, in terms of like how much of this emphasis is being put on these, you know. And so that's why we try to marry the ROI with best practices, and that is actually a true thing, you know, because doing the right thing, you know, it will eventually provide the right ROI for you if you're implementing AI. So that's, I think that is one concern that we have. Yeah,
that's a good concern. Okay, well, I mean, like, if you, in 5 years' time, and you're imagining a kind of a fully agentic, you know, world that we live in, what do you think are the biggest changes on how businesses? What do you think the biggest changes you will see around how businesses operate today?
I think I see a world in 5 years where a lot of the software that we see today is transformed to be AI based and or agentic or whatever you want to call the term of the day at the time. AI based software, right? And I think that is very clear to me, given the rate at which the models are improving and the enthusiasm of the community in building and shipping, and already some early results of, you know, companies claiming massive you know, efficiency gains that they are seeing from deploying these systems. I think we are entering that stage for sure. And I think the way to we want to ensure that people are building those systems the right way, you know, so that they get those outcomes and better outcomes faster.
Do you see like kind of a web of agents and like B2B agents talking to B2C agents and vice versa?
Yeah, I mean, you already see introduction of MCP, the model context protocols, that are trying to enable, you know, almost trying to become like an HTTP of between agents, right? So where, you know, imagine that example that I talked about where you have a travel agent that has to make a, you know, a flight reservation, make a Airbnb reservation, make a, you know, whatever, a cab, you know, a sort of a rental car reservation. So you imagine a situation where it might be calling an Expedia agent and an Airbnb agent and or maybe some sort of a sixth rental car company agent, and it's all combining all of those results into a schedule and giving you the final result, right? And yeah. I don't think it's pretty near, actually. It's probably going to happen in the next year or a couple of years.
Closer than I thought. So finally, just what's one takeaway? And I asked this of all the interviewers that we've been having on the show, but like, what's one takeaway for enterprise leaders that you would leave them with when thinking about applying agents? What should they be thinking or doing differently?
I think one of my biggest realizations in the last couple of months is this notion of compound AI stack, right?
Okay.
I think enterprises, you know, we largely work with enterprises, and the best way to get ROI from agentic AI is think about how can you improve your existing software using agentic AI. And that's where this this notion of the compound AI stack. So you may have existing machine learning models, existing data assets, existing software systems. How can you bring them into the fold of Gen AI and, you know, increase the utility of those tools, increase the utility of those applications? And to me, this is where the biggest ROI is there for enterprise. How can you modernize your credit risk application? You know, you may have credit scoring models that have been built over years, like statistical models. How can you modernize your KYC and anti-money laundering workflows? How can you modernize your customer support workflows? I think how can you modernize your, you know, sort of business intelligence, you know, workflows? So you can think about building an agentic skin on your existing software. And I think we are seeing that happen with a few of our enterprise customers, and they're seeing good ROI. And I think we call it the compound AI effect.
Right,
where you take what you have and layer on this agentic skin and start, you know, seeing some very quick ROIs, you know, versus like, you know, we there are other problems with an enterprise, right? Is like, you know, doing something new is you know, disrupting something internally that's working well. It's sort of a long process. We believe that this could be a very quick way to bring an AI into the fold, mm-hmm. and educate your organization the impact of it, while sort of still, you know, not losing like the full ROI of it. You know, you can extract a good amount of ROI with this type of compound AI effect.
And when you talk about that skin, like, can you be a bit more specific? Like, what is that skin?
So think about it this way, right? So you have let's talk about KYC, right? So you have an existing KYC application that is probably running with some, you know, let's say some rule based system, some machine learning based system. So you have some structured data, some right. Now, let's say if you want to automate this using an agentic workflow, mm-hmm. instead of completely rewriting it, mm-hmm. you can put like an agentic workflow on existing system, right? Mm-hmm. And in fact, agentic workflows lend itself that way, where you can write a programmatic orchestration that can call your existing database. It can call your existing predictive models. It can bring those results back into the system. It can, and then it can automate that, you know your customer workflow, mm-hmm. for you in a manner and improves the efficiency and reliability, and you know, and maybe potentially reduces the amount of humans that need to review all of that, right? So that's basically what I talk about. Okay. So where you completely don't get rid of what you have, right? And that is a hard challenge for enterprises, right? Like, you know, every new wave comes in and people, oh god, like, we just went from, like, you know, data center to cloud transformation, and we just did our modern data stack. Oh, now you're telling me to go and do something else. And so what compound AI talks about is you take advantage of all the things that you've done so far, your cloud movement to cloud, your movement to data, and layer on AI on your data assets, on your existing software assets, mm-hmm. and extract that ROI.
So these agents could use like coded tools to tap into the APIs,
existing
CRM solutions.
And agentic workflows lend itself that way,
right?
Because you're mixing those tool calls and database calls with LLM calls, and you're trying to create this intelligent automation.
Yeah, very cool, very cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us on the Agent Effect podcast. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Krishna, and I wish you all the best with Fiddler.
Absolutely. It was lovely to talk to you. And, you know, thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you.